Hello, my name is Floyd Maxwell, justthinker.com, doing a Floydcast, number 27 for August 18, 2014. I thought I would give a name to this Floydcast, or a concept, conceptual name to this Floydcast. This is going to be the Humanity Cast. This one's about people and about caring about people. And I thought it would be appropriate to start with an Adobe Acrobat file or document that I downloaded last week. It's called The State of Peace. And it shows the relative state of peace in the world. It's that world map, that projection that I almost remember the name of it. The whole world can be seen in one picture, sort of flattened out, kind of really distorted, but it's all there. And the countries are colored. Green means very peaceful. Red means very non-peaceful. So, of course, the biggest country in the world, Russia, is labeled red currently. A big red splotch on the map. But, you know, by and large, it wasn't that red. Maybe the average was yellow. Some of the big countries like Canada, you know, green, but the U.S. is yellow. But just think, you know, the people in power, they created that map. They created every single solitary bit of it. They want that level of war. So, the state of peace map is really the state of war map. That's really what it is. Because individually, collectively, we don't want war. Only the people who are lusting for power want war. I want what you got. Give it to me. First story I got here. This goes back about a month, last in July, July 7th. The title of the story was The Pursuit of Radical Acceptance, which doesn't give you much to chew on. Here's a quote from the article. 3 years ago, when Brandon Marshall got out of treatment for borderline personality disorder, he began taping a documentary. The videographer has been with him ever since. In this scene, meeting the property owner, blah, 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 Marshall explains why he hasn't been in touch sooner. I'm just now getting right, is how he puts it. Well, that's great. Someone's getting their act together. It's being filmed. It's a success story, right? Those are rare these days. Let's do the numbers on his name. You can probably guess. Brandon Marshall. Brandon, 775, accident looking for a place to happen. Marshall, 213. And the 213 is not a strong combination. If anything, if you had a 213 combination anywhere in your makeup, it's emotional, it's sort of a party. I always just think of the word party. So Marshall equals party. And put that with a first name that can attract their share of bad experiences, accidents, bizarre things. Well, you can imagine, right? The drugs flow, you think you're having fun, and the next thing you know, something bad's happened. I would say that sums up his life a lot. He's got a 988 total, 8 destiny, successful destiny. So what happens is you have a guy who, his names basically say he's a bit of a mess, but he's successful. So what does that mean? It means that people give you money and you're a mess. So this guy's a football player. He made it to the show. He made it to the biggest football game in town. But he can't get or keep his life together. You know, it's very hard for him. Just now getting right. And he's been working his life 20 years or whatever, however long it is, 25 years. What a shame. But at least props for giving it an effort. Now the third story, the number 3, will feature in the next person I want to talk about. I had a chance yesterday, sort of spontaneously, a homeless person was outside while I was working. I had gotten up super early yesterday, just very motivated, full of energy ever since I got rid of the microwaves. Tons of energy. Tons. And I, at first light, literally, I was like out there, I did all the watering, and then I was like, okay, let's get the first project started. 6 o'clock in the morning. Putting up gutters on one of the roofs here. And they are the world's worst gutters, so there's no doubt. Actually, the first one that I put up was not that bad. I put up some worse ones later on. I'll blame it on something. How about the heat of the day? In the heat of the day, I put up some poor gutters. I'll fix those later. A couple of years from now, I'll fix those. But this guy came along in mid, you know, hammer blow and said, you know, hey, if you're looking for someone to help out, I'm really handy. And, you know, and I said, well, you know, I don't really need help. And this is something to keep me occupied. I'm not really working as much as I would like to these days. So this is something to keep me occupied. He's like, okay, just thought I'd ask. And I was like, let me think about it. Come back later. Let me think about it. Anyway, bottom line, this person's, you know, dumpster diving and trying to survive. Homeless. Drug issues. Let's look at his name. What I'll do with this person, I'll just give you the combinations to keep his privacy alive. So his first name is 617. That's a good quality. An intellectual person, kind of a quiet person, thoughtful, deep thinker. misunderstood, does well in school, and just wants to be out in nature, basically. And the last name, 685. Also a very good name. Now, you know, a little bit more challenging as a family name, because with that 5 there, the 5 kind of, sorry, but it kind of wrecks whatever number it's with. So even though the 6 is there, the 5 kind of, it's the worst of the 6s, basically. It undermines the 6. The 6 is stable, responsible, serious, family-oriented, teachers, you know, all these good qualities, quality of mind. And the 5 is, it undermines all that. It's restless, it's chaotic, doesn't want to do the same thing twice, can be very harping and critical and negative. So he thinks sixiously and responsibly and seriously and, you know, you could say nicely or in a parental fashion, and then he expresses like a comedian who's having a bad day. Let's put it that way. So, really, 2 pretty good names, right? How did this guy get in this situation? Well, let's add them together. So, 617, 685, 393 total. 3 destiny. Well, we were saying about the Marshall, the 213. 213 is sort of a party combination. The 2 loves people. 2 doesn't want to work too hard. It just sort of wants to talk kind of thing. And 3 wants to have fun. 3 wants to live life to the fullest, which is to say, life is a bowl of cherries, and everyone else gets the pits. 3 wants everything but pits. And in a way, that's not fair. You might say the 2 wants everything but pits. But the 3, they take life with a shrug of the shoulders. They want to experience it. They don't mind getting down the gutter, talking to a guy in the gutter kind of thing. They want to see smiles on people's faces. And when things go wrong, you shrug the shoulders, you know, oh well. You know, it doesn't really matter how sort of serious it is. When something goes wrong, you're like, oh well, then shrug. And it's that shrugging that's kind of healthy, which is why the 3 is a pretty good number in the mind, in the name. You know, it's just life. You know, that's life. You need to have a philosophical attitude, and the 3 helps with that, definitely. However, with this person's case, 393-3 destiny, the 3 can be indulgent. When you have the 3 as the bottom number, it puts you in that 3-ish environment constantly. Well, the 3 is, think of it like when you plant the seeds, you know, the seed is the 1, the germination is the 2, and then the 3 is the life, the little shoots coming above the ground. Well, you can't survive as little shoots coming above the ground. It looks beautiful, it looks exciting, hey, we got stuff growing. But there's no strength there, there's no stability there, there's no future in those little things coming above the ground until they put their roots down, until they grow to their proper size, until they put out the bud and the flower and get the fruit and get the seeds for the next crop, right? Otherwise, it's just a little promise and you could come by the next day and the sun has killed those little shoots. Just like that. So, you don't want a 3 destiny. Your life goes up and down, you know, you're constantly, new little shoots coming up, and random things happen to those little shoots. And, as I say, it can be indulgent, and, you know, different numbers can be addicted in different ways. Really, all of them can be addicted. But some are a little more prone to it than others. I would say the 1 is addicted to the simple life. They would leave others alone, they want to be left alone. Don't bother me with the truth, don't bother me with, you know, the things I need to worry about or think about that I haven't thought about. I'm fine, just leave me alone. And they're sort of addicted to that simplicity. They're often not joiners. The 1 is not a joiner. And so, well, sometimes you need to join something to learn something. When you join, you don't have to turn in your soul at the door. I'm thinking of one organization in particular that to advance beyond a certain level, and that's personal advance. That's not advance within the organization, but to personally advance, to receive more or additional valuable things, at some point, they ask that you be a member and support the organization. And, you know, that can come across as hard to some people. These days, we expect everything for nothing. But really, everything costs everything. The more valuable something is, the more you have to put into it. It's like I've talked about with my names. I want to give the names away. Well, the problem is then they're not perceived as valuable. I think they're the most valuable thing. So, there you go. The 1 addicted to being sort of by themselves or independence. The 2 is addicted to others. The opposite, right? I remember hearing a story about a person who was very, very 2-ish, and they found out about the organization, and they changed everything in their life, and they were suddenly this real success. And then one day they were really happy, and it turned out they did something by themselves that day. They were in their 20s at least, and it was basically the first day of their life where they did something on their own. Not kidding you. He was a great guy. I remember that guy very well, very vividly. He was that kind of a guy. He was a vivid, expressive, enthusiastic, energetic guy. But boy, did he need people. He was addicted to that. The three is addicted to fun on the negative side. You know, life's a party. And life's an opinion. Life's an argument. Life's a discussion. Life is the next party, the next argument, the next discussion. And it can be drugs. It can be, you know, some people drink and then they get drunk and fall down. And some people drink and then they get more expressive. And then they put a lampshade in their head and they entertain you. And the three wants to entertain you. And alcohol, in some cases, for some threes, you know, it gets things going. Well, of course, nowadays we have different drugs and different addictions, and other things can get you going. And the three can sort of get dependent on that. You know, those water fountains where the water's running all the time, and you just have to bend over and you get a drink right away. There was a time when those were really popular, and, you know, these days they're probably a little bit irresponsible, and now you have to bend over and push a button or step on a lever or have a motion detector to detect your head is there before some wire comes out. And that's a good thing. That's progressive. Well, the three qualities like that fountain bubbling away all the time. And so they run out of energy. They're very expressive. They want to give to others, and that's a lovely quality, but they run out of energy. And so there are different ways to get energy back, and some of them are healthy, like sleeping or eating the proper food, having good elimination, drinking the proper water, and sleeping, you know, those sort of basic things, basic needs taken care of, and then you get your energy back. But if you want to keep going and keep partying, you got a three destiny, you can resort to other things to get your energy back. And of course, you're robbing from Peter to feed Paul. You're building up a debt. And that debt comes in the form of being addicted to something. The four can be addicted to routine. They don't want to change, period. They just don't want to change. I did it yesterday, I want to do it today. I had bacon and eggs yesterday, I want bacon and eggs today. Don't ask. Kind of close-minded. One foot following the other. Take the same route to work. Have a job that they don't really think about the implication of the job. Well, I work in a liquor store, it's okay, it's good money. Hey, you're selling booze, you're selling a poison to people. You know, think about it. Do you really want to work at a liquor store? I don't care who you are. Do you really want to work at a liquor store? In the U.S., liquor stores are less common, and what's more common is, you know, the booze is in the grocery store, which, for me as a Canadian transplant, it's hard to get used to. Been walking down the aisles, and there's the booze aisles. I mean, I just stay away from them like the plague. I don't want to be near those aisles. I don't want to go down those aisles. I don't want to look at those aisles. I've been like that for forever. Sure, when I was a kid, I wanted to drink, and I managed to make a fool of myself a few times. It's a losing game, boozes, that's for certain. So anyway, the four is routine. The five is addicted to change, the opposite, right? They just want to change, change, change. Whatever they're doing, they're not happy with it. I remember a guy, and he had a 595 name, old name. And he said the way he was under that name was, he'd be at a party, and suddenly he'd want to leave. That was it. He just wanted to leave. And he would literally be outside the door and gone. And then he'd pause for a minute and go, why did I leave? That's the five. That perfectly summarizes the five. It can do anything it puts its mind to. But then it wants to change. And so that change undermines the five. Like every quality, it can be good or bad. And on the positive side, when you have fluoride toothpaste, you need to change. But when you have Tom's toothpaste that's fluoride-free, you don't need to change. You don't need to change the flavor. You don't need to think about your toothpaste. Whatever your brand of fluoride-free is, by the way. Tom's just happened to be what I use, but there's probably 1,000 brands if you look for them. I'm starting my Floydcast a little late today. Circumstances dictated and something a little different. It's getting light out already. And I've done a few chores about the place. Not that many, actually, but kept myself busy until Floydcast time. Anyway, I just got distracted. See, that was like a five-ish distraction right there. So the six, the addiction of the six is to think they know it all. And that can be a real problem. Because compared to other people, that six knows an awful lot. This guy, I was talking to you yesterday, he has a six in the first name, a six in the last name. This guy knows an awful lot. He's not your average person down on their luck. Not at all. That's why I gave him quite a bit of my time yesterday. But the mistake of that six is, if I know it all about subjects A, B, C, D, E, then I got it figured out. You know, some qualities, they go, you know, what's the meaning of life? What is my purpose today? I'm thinking of the 1, 5, and 7 right away. The one, in my mind, I sort of came up with this concept to describe the one. This is just my own sort of personal concept, you might say, maybe wrong. But to me, the one quality wakes up in the morning, they say, what is the right thing to do today? I don't know of any other quality that does it to that extent. The one is always on task. On the positive side, you know, on the negative side, I guess the task can be a non-constructive task, and they can be always on that. But it's that asking of the question that's such a good part of that one quality. Other qualities will forget, like the party qualities, the 2 and the 3, they forget completely what their original project was. The 5 can forget because the 5 is so sort of chaotic. Think of the 5 as like one person running a concession stand, and you have 4 lines of people, and you have 50 items on the menu, and the 5's trying to serve everybody. You're going to forget a few orders. That's the 5. Well, the one quality is like the guy who has a hot dog stand, or let's say, let's make it a little more healthy, the guy who has a coffee cart. And every day he gets up, and every day he gets out the cart. Let's say he pedals it. He pedals his cart to where he's allowed to do business. He sets it up. He's got all his ingredients. He doesn't compromise. He doesn't just randomly change ingredients, start selling cigarettes because it's more money. He doesn't go, oh, I forgot to shop yesterday, so I can't open up today. He took care of all those things. He takes care of all those things every day. And he just shows up, and if there's a few people there, great. And if there's more, okay. There's sort of an even-keeledness to the one quality when they're on that task. They can put up with a lot when they're on task. And it's very admirable. We all need to incorporate the positive side of all of these numbers. We all need to be that one-ish person on task. Alright, so the 6 can be the know-it-all. I know what I'm doing. I'm good at bridge. I remember meeting a person. They were taking over my job. This company wanted to hire me. I didn't want to stay. It was a bank. It was a trust company. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. I was working as a temp. They wanted me to be permanent. I liked some aspects of the job. It was kind of interesting. But never in 1,000,000,000,000,000,000 years would I work for them under any circumstances. I would take their money if they just handed it to me and didn't ask me to do anything. But that's it. That's it. Anyway, so they brought in somebody else. And this person was like the prototypical bank employee. This person was outer path. This person was the 6 quality personified. This person played bridge, and she'd get on the phone, oh, yeah, we were playing bridge last night, and blah, blah, blah. Or cribbage, or whatever it was, you know. Or crazy eats. I don't know what it was. It was, you know, I think it was bridge. But that's that contentedness for no good reason. That's the negative side of the 6. The positive side is, you know, we do need to have a stable life. We do need to be content with many aspects of our life while we work on the aspects we're not content with. You know, we need a large chunk of stability in our lives. That's the positive side of the 6. So it's a balance, right? Just like with every number. So this guy yesterday, this homeless guy, he's got all those 6s. He's a more balanced and more stable than average homeless guy. Believe it or not. Now let's get to the 7. The 7 is a quester, a thinker, a deep thinker. We were saying the 1 wakes up and says, what's the right thing to do? The 5 wakes up and they're going. They're just going. They're just randomly going. The 7 is a deeper thinker. They can't help it. You know, where everyone else is, you know, think of it like little birds splashing in a bird bath. The 7 is like that whale that dives down 2,000 feet down and opens his mouth and feeds deeply of all the krill or whatever. He's gone down under for 20 minutes and comes up for a breath, you know. I probably just combined 5 sea creatures in that one example, but that's the 7. Diving down deep, you don't see him. The waters are still, but that animal is down deep where the really good stuff is. But at the same time, you don't want the 7 in your name. You don't want to be living down deep. You know, you want a name that's not so much surface, but let's call it swimming. Swimming is partly on the surface, and swimming is partly below the surface, and that's that balance of the 6. But the 7 is the deep diver, and they come up with the pearls from time to time, definitely. Well, my friend yesterday had the 617, so he's got pearls. He's got a lot to offer. This guy, he so impressed me. He had a bike. It was in pretty good shape, but it was the world's crappiest bike. It was industrial strength, weighed as much as my truck, I think. Maybe a bit more. And I have two bikes. We have lots of bikes here. I have two of my own. And I got one many years ago. I call it my speed bike. There's a guy in our neighborhood who fixes bikes. He's blind. And he fixes bikes. And I just love this guy. I just think it's great what he's doing. So it's always a more power to him kind of thing. When I find bike parks, I give them to him. And, you know, we bought a lot of our bikes from him. My current mountain bike, I bought that new when I first came to this area 10 years ago. And it's still running great. It's been one of the best purchases of my life. It's a great, rugged mountain bike. And to me, like, the mountain bike is sort of like my truck. I've become a real truck fan. And I've always been a bike fan, but now I'm a mountain bike fan. They're just so much more stable, so much stronger. And like the truck, all you do is put gas in it. All I do with my mountain bike is put my own personal gas in it, my own energy. That's it. I had to get Kevlar tires. You can get Kevlar instead of just rubber. I guess that's probably a mix. Because I was getting thorns and screws and nails all in my tire and getting flats. Ever since I got the Kevlar tires, problem solved. Great solution. You know, in this area, for some reason, there's just a lot of stuff on the road. Might be to do with rainfall. It's one of the drier areas here, so. And you don't see street cleaners here. Almost ever. It's probably once a year you see a street cleaner. Whereas, again, in other areas, I've seen them more often. Anyway. So I had this speed bike, this bike that I got from the blind guy. Very light. Kind of funky. Because he, you know, takes parts and slaps it together kind of thing. And when I say slaps, I mean, you know, combines it together. But it's not designed with one vision. It's multiple visions. And the price was very much right. It was probably, I probably got it for 5 times cheaper than it would cost new. And it was a very light bike. I wasn't using it at all. You know, in this area with the roads the way they are, I wanted it for longer distances. Well, as soon as you get longer distances, you're increasing your chances of a flat, basically. And it wasn't a mountain bike. It wasn't stable and strong. You couldn't carry a lot of stuff on it. And it was just like, this just isn't the fit for me. If I was commuting by bike every day, which I don't do that, but if I was, that would be a very good bike for that purpose. Anyway, long story short, why should I hold on to this bike when I got this guy who, he is a go-getter. Much better than ever. There he was at 6 in the morning, just like myself. He was out and out early, scrounging, yeah, but offering his services. If I had said yeah, and if I had the money, he would be working, and we'd be working on projects. Gotta hand it to the guy. So, anyway, I gave him my bike. And the funny thing was, he didn't just take this bike and go, thanks, and ride off. He spent the next several hours combining his bike and my bike. And this was really amazing. I've never seen anything like it. He liked the seat on his bike. He liked the frame on mine. He liked the wheels on his, but he liked the wheels on mine. And he ended up taking all the wheels, which was actually quite practical, because wheels get bent, they get flat. If you got spare wheels, you know, great. He liked the rear axle and the cluster on his. It had some special mechanism that when you coasted, it didn't tick. You know, 10 speeds. Ever since the 3-speed and up, they all tick when you coast. Tick, 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 tick. And he was saying how when he rides, he likes to not have the ticking. Well, of course, what quality doesn't like noise, excess noise, mechanical noise? It'd be the 7, right? He's got the 7 right in the first name. But also, when you're riding, good riding, your ears are super important. And as he put it, when you coast silently and you turn your head sideways, he said, so that the wind doesn't go in your ears. I know exactly what he's talking about. I've done exactly the same thing, but I've never heard anyone else talk about it. He said you can hear even a Prius running on electric. Well, he's absolutely right. This is a Prius Asia, certainly a Prius area. And you can hear the quietest of vehicles when your bike doesn't tick and you turn your head sideways. That's how smart this guy was. He's really, you know, he's an interesting study. I don't think our paths have fully separated, but interesting guy. So the 7, the deep diver, the addiction of the 7 is they want to be alone. What was this guy talking about yesterday? One of the things he talked about several times was getting a chunk of land somewhere and a couple of acres somewhere and just getting off the grid, getting away from everybody. Well, that's like the 7's folly. You know, this is such a connected world. We've all been exposed to so much. Once you've been pulled the ripcord and that inflatable Acme raft, it doesn't want to go back in the original packaging. Once you've been exposed to Google and so many other things, it's very hard to go back. And this is a world of people, and this world needs people. This world doesn't need people hiding out. This world needs people who can face life and who can illuminate life. inspire and encourage others, you know, do something good, not do something bad. That's what this world needs. So the seventh mistake is to think they can hide. They can definitely get addicted to non-communication, to the solo life, sort of like the one quality. The one quality says, you know, I'm fine, just leave me alone. And the seven is like that, only they don't say anything. But what they're thinking is, I'm fine, just leave me alone. No, they're probably not thinking I'm fine, because the seven is so sensitive that they pick up the noise of life. And this is the destructive human noise, the human discord. Most humans are discordant. Their names are not balanced. Their lives are not balanced. The seven is a tuning fork and a receiving set for all that discord. They are tortured souls. So the eight. The eight is addicted to money, to success, to power, to controlling others, to getting others to do your bidding. This world is controlled by, you could say, the eight quality, the negative side of the eight quality. The eight can be so magnanimous and generous and humanitarian and, what's the word I'm looking for, philanthropic. And it can be so miserly, and it's like Scrooge. Scrooge is a very good symbol of that eight. Scrooge before he wakes up is the negative side of the eight. Scrooge after he wakes up is the positive side of the eight. Really? That's it. This world encourages materialism and success, in quotes. And so this world encourages people to be the negative side of the eight quality. The nine on the negative is poor me, or it's all about me, or sort of in a small world, the world of self. And the big side of the nine, the positive side of the nine is the big side of the nine. Big is 999. And there's a bigness to life, and every person has so much potential. And the positive side of the nine is they want to bring out that potential. So there was me yesterday wanting to perhaps somehow help this person bring out a bit of their potential. And yeah, it's not a gimme. It's not an automatic. A lot of people with an addicted person, a lot of people pour in a lot of time, money, energy, and get disappointed, get not a result that everyone was hoping for. So, you know, what I ended up doing with this person is what you end up having to do. I told him no. We gave him food. He needed food. We gave it to him. We gave it to him, you know, four different times. When he asked for money, no. He asked for money explicitly the first time for cigarettes and fuel for his vehicle. I said, no, not for cigarettes. And so then he was like, well, then just for fuel? And I said, no, we don't have the resources to give you that money. And what's the guarantee that you'd use it for that purpose? Oh, you could ride with him in his vehicle to the gas station and get that fuel into his car. There's still no guarantee. You know, it seems hard when you say no, but at the same time, that's what he needed to hear. I don't have any doubt about that. Because me saying no is really me saying yes. I said yes to him. I said, you're a very bright person. You're very strong. You can do it. But the thing you need to do is to get free of it first. Free of the lifestyle robber. Free of the addiction. And yeah, none of us get completely free of anything, right? But when you break the physical addiction, when you come to terms with the emotional addiction, you are more free. And you can work towards balance. You can do something useful. You know, we're all in between addictions. We're all in between being free. You know, we have to accept that, and that's okay. The point is to get on with your life. The point is to do something constructive. The point is to stop thinking all day long, what do I have to do to score again? Or when you're up and high, the addict's mistake, his folly, is to think that he has special thoughts when he's high. They don't. Those thoughts have no value. No value at all. Drugs, I would say, are kind of like, it's like you went and did something. You thought, let's say you went to a movie, and you thought it was going to be a good movie, and it turned out to be a really bad movie, but you got up and left. That's like you tried the drug once, and you went, no. And you got up and left. Yeah, you still had an experience. You can still draw from that movie. I went and saw Inception. I was trying to remember the DiCaprio movie a couple of Floyd casts ago. And it was Inception, and we went to see that in the theater, and it was so horrendously loud we had to leave. But I got the gist of it. Enough that I never want to watch that movie in any form, even on TV or DVD or anything. It's been on TV already. Horrible, stupid movie. How did that get hyped into the level that it got hyped into? I have no idea. I have no idea. It just shows they control everything. They control what we get excited about. That's just so ridiculous. All right, I'm rambling there. Let me try and bring my thoughts back. Oh, dear. What was I talking about? Don't remember exactly. Let's keep moving on. This is my humanitarian cast, so I gave you a gist on the numbers and how each can be addicted. All right, next story here. Tennessee drug tests on 800 welfare applicants. They just started a new thing where they're going to test every welfare applicant to see if they're on drugs, thinking a whole bunch of them are on drugs and we don't want to enable them, right? They found out of 800 people, a grand total of one person was using drugs. So these welfare cases were probably 100 times better than the average of us, of you and me. Imagine that. They were way better. Because you and me, we're doing alcohol, we're doing pot, we've experimented with every drug, right? Most people have done that. I haven't, by the way, but I'm just saying the average person has experimented with many drugs. And they're taking pharmaceuticals, which is to say drugs. And they're hooked on those. Hooked on Prozac, a blue pill that changes your body anatomy. So many, quote, normal people, quote, are addicted to drugs. And here are these welfare people not on them. Well, guess why? And this is where the state and the snobs, the rich snobs, of which there are plenty in life, certainly plenty on Slashdot. You know, the guy who's got the good job, he thinks, you know, the welfare person is a growth on society, a burden. They think they're just tapping the system, just sucking, a blood-sucking leech. They're not like that. They're people that something happened that changed their life. They're not in a good way. Often it's their name. They have a name that they can't accumulate money. Or they have a name that makes life so challenging that they get into drug issues. Or they just can't hold down a steady job because of the name. You know, really, it's name, name, name. Absolutely. Your name paints you into a corner. And it might be a corner with food and water and a bed. Or it might be a corner with nothing. And the other thing is, these welfare people, they can't afford drugs. You know, isn't it obvious? I've been low on income. I'm never one to have a lot of income because I don't want to spend a lot of time working. Not working for the man. I want to work on the things that are important to life, not the things that are important to the man. I don't want to work in a liquor store or an abattoir or a funeral home. I don't want to work in a funeral home. None of us do, right? But what I'm trying to say is that each job is like that. Almost every job you can think of has a really insidious, nasty side to it. And some don't. The care business is really quite good. And as a result, it's one of the worst paying of all fields. That's the thing. The better the job is for you and for life, the worse the pay. If you know somebody who's making millions, move. Get away from them. So Tennessee drug tests of 800 people find one person using drugs. Man. Next story. Police shoot John Crawford, is the guy's name, dead in a Walmart for carrying a BB gun that he got from the toy aisle. This really happened in a Walmart. Some witnesses say Crawford was pointing the gun at customers and children and did not comply with police commands. The gun, an MK-177 Crossman BB pellet rifle, is stocked in Walmart. Can you believe that happened? What's the guy's name? John Crawford. John 652. Crawford 797. Now the 7 is misunderstood. Do you think this guy was misunderstood in this situation? I think he was. He's got a 459 total, which is discordant, and a 9 destiny, the destiny of losses and tragedies. I don't think we need to say more about that story. Humanicast continues. Next story. Why are dope-addicted, disgraced doctors running our drug trials? Apparently, this story on Medium.com, I'll have the link, is saying that when something bad happens to Dr. A, in those rare moments where someone manages to prosecute a doctor and sort of catch them doing bad and cause them to lose their regular gig, their regular job, these doctors promptly get put in charge of drug trials. And just think about the implications of that. Yeah, this drug is fine. I know it's fine. Because I'm a doctor. Alright, next story. The best-selling billion-dollar pills tested on homeless people. Yes, these are two related stories, both on Medium. I read the second one first, and then the other one, I just ran into it as well. How the destitute and the mentally ill are being used as human lab rats. So we have disgraced doctors running drug trials, and their prime test people are destitute and mentally ill, i.e. homeless people. These drug trials pay pretty good, $1,500. A typical trial might say, you know, we're looking for someone that's having trouble with addiction, cocaine addiction. There have been cases, the story talks about, where a homeless person will proceed to use cocaine one or more times just so that when they go to this drug trial, the clinic, when they test them, they find cocaine in their system. I'm not kidding you. Isn't it interesting? What this reminds me of is how religion is in bed with all forms of corruption. You can just go top to bottom. Religion and corruption go hand in hand. And it's the same here. Drugs, pharmaceuticals, I guess have to differentiate, and illicit drugs, they go hand in hand. It's like law enforcement and criminals often go hand in hand. They know where each other hangs out. They get to know each other. The cops know the criminals and vice versa better than you know your spouse. So the corruption's inevitable. You catch the guy, he's got a stack of money, he's like, here, take the money and we'll call it even. You're like, wow, I just got a whole bunch of cash. And he's like, wow, I got free. I'm not saying, you know, it specifically happens or it happens where you live or it happens a lot. I'm not into that. I'm just saying that one attracts the other. Because it's not a solution, right? A cop is not a solution and a drug dealer is not a solution. Drugs, pharmaceuticals are not a solution, and street drugs, illegal drugs, are not a solution. And so one attracts the other. They're more similar than different. Next story. Red Rain, name of a documentary. China's organ harvesting. This one's kind of horrific. You can find it on YouTube. You can also get it on probably from your library in some cases. In China, there have been cases, documented cases. This is like a known thing. They take prisoners. They find out you got the right blood type or whatever. You got a healthy liver or whatever. And they harvest that liver from the prisoner while the prisoner is alive. Now just stop and think about this. It's horrific, but just stop and think about it. What drives things? What drives things is the economic equation. When there's a strong economic push, something will happen. No matter how horrific. Let's look at this from China's government's point of view. You have prisoners, they're a problem. China's, you know, particularly insensitive to the plight of a prisoner. So you have these people, you have to pay money to look after them. You look after them for years, cost you nothing but money. And then you have to let these people go back out into society where they could easily offend again. And where other people don't want to employ them. And, you know, they're kind of shattered people, right? They're going to be a problem and a ward of the state one way or another, on average, for the rest of their life. But you can harvest their organs, sell the organs for a very, obviously, very good dollar, and get rid of your problem. You don't have to care for them anymore. The younger, the better. The young organ is more healthy. And the younger prisoner is going to live longer. Their wrecked life is going to cost you for longer. The economic equation behind this is so powerful. It's not surprising that it's happening. Someone sent me this link after, you know, they'd watched my fluoride thing and thanked me for that. And then they said, by the way, you should check this out if you haven't already. Wow. That's one of those ones that it's like a good nightmare. Some things, they get into your consciousness and then you're not the same afterwards. They say that about acid, LSD. I never took it, but they say that. Well, the guy yesterday, the homeless guy, was saying he tried it a few times when, many years ago, and he said it took him a couple of years to get over the after effect of it. I believe it. That's my understanding of that as well. That's a nightmare. That drug creates lingering nightmares afterwards. It's a good reason to not do that drug. Well, sometimes we learn something that creates a nightmare that we have to come to terms with that. We have to live with that and think about that. I had one, and this is kind of a bizarre, out of left field comparison, but I had one that I'm going to say just because it comes to mind. I've never talked about it before, I guess. I collect quotations. I've done it for most of my life, the majority of my life. I love quotations. I love little punchy thoughts because my dad taught me those thoughts. One of my dad's favorite sayings, and I have it as the dedication quote in his book of writings that I typed and I have it available on my website. This dedication says, when you're 90% of the way, you're halfway. And this was always one of these, you know, you love to think about it. Why is that the case? You sort of sense, if you're a deep thinker, you sort of sense, yeah, I think that's right. But then you're like, well, why is that right? Well, it's that outer path, inner path. The outer path, number the six, you know, you think there's nine numbers, right? And when you're at the sixth stage, you're two-thirds of the way, right? Well, there are really 12 numbers. But until you have worked on the nine and mastered the nine, the 10 and 11 and 12 might as well not exist. Those doors open later, if they open at all. So, given that there are 12 numbers, when you have mastered that outer path and you think I'm 90% of the way to being the perfect bridge player, Scrabble player, you're halfway. Now the inner journey starts. And really, it doesn't just start then. It's always, there's always an inner journey and an outer journey. There's always the fun of the three and the giving of the nine and the materialism of the eight. And all those numbers are happening all the time. Each hour, the numbers change. Each day, the numbers change. But still, your progression, you know, you sort of have to systematically learn how to climb up those chakras, up those centers, up those nine steps. So, dedication of my father's book was, when you're 90% of the way, you're halfway. I always collected quotations. I've always been given them by my dad and always appreciated their power and value in that. I have 6,000 subscribers who receive them every weekday, 45 quotes a week. I've done it for 15 years, 16 years. Really believe in it. Really believe in it. Every day we got to think about good things, and I find condensed things are the most practical thing to think about every day. Because if it's not condensed, who has time? How much time can you dedicate to something? So one of the guys I really liked his quotes always is Einstein. I mean, Einstein, it turns out, he's a thinker on all levels. This is why he became such an international sensation. He really is an interesting guy. More than just any one thing. More than just his physics stuff. He was a humanitarian. He was very anti-war. You know, just for his anti-war stance. Just for being a famous person who was anti-war. Einstein had a contribution to life. Now you can say he was pro-war and whatnot. He was talked into allowing his name to appear on a letter that went to the U.S. president. I'm sorry, that's not pro-war. That was talked into something that you did reluctantly. That's all that is and was. If you want to look at a guy who has really helped on the atomic movement, look at Edward Teller. Just look for Edward Teller, man. Just go to YouTube. Just look at that guy, his physical appearance, and just listen to that guy talk, and you'll realize, okay, that's the kind of guy we're we're apprehensive about. Not Einstein, no. So he was a pacifist, and any intelligent person should automatically be a pacifist. Remember, that's how this podcast started. Anyway, Einstein was interesting in so many ways. I'd recently read the Ultimate Einstein Quotation Book or something like that. And it had more quotes and more original quotes from him than I ever heard of before, all put in one spot. Some years back, someone even did a bronze bust of Einstein and gave it to me with a little plaque, dedicating it to me because of my quotations that I send out, and he gave me the Einstein Award. This guy does these bronzes of these famous people, these remarkable people. And so Einstein has always been a big part of the quotes that I send out. But some years back, a year or two back, something I read shocked me. Was Einstein responsible for relativity? And the short answer is that Einstein built on the people before him. Einstein had his own take on things. Einstein actually made some assumptions which allowed him to come up with his theories, but also, in my mind, started the clock going on when physics made a big mistake. Physics walked away from the ether 100 years ago, in part because of Einstein and what he did. His theory, you know, doesn't need an ether. Depends. He actually has two theories, general and special relativity. One sort of assumed it, and one said it didn't need it. Which is kind of interesting if you think about it. Anyway, so I had to wrestle with, you know, my hero being, what? He didn't come up with it, or did he, or yada yada. It can be hard. And then it's like you think about it all the time. It's shocking. China harvesting organs from living people is shocking. And you have to live with it, and you have to reconcile with it, and you have to carry on and be happy despite that. Because really, what's driving that? What drives illegal drug trade? Illegal drug trade is driven by people who sell the drugs. They're the worst offenders. They're the pimps. And then it's by people using those drugs. You and me, right? We're the prostitutes. We're prostituting ourselves for drugs. We're giving up our bodies to a drug. That's a terrible thing. Whether it's a legal or illegal drug, we're supposed to treat our body like a temple, not be prostitutes to a drug. Let's think about that. I really feel like I lectured a lot there. I apologize. Next story. This is Robin Williams. Robin Williams passed away this last week. Today's story, the tidbit today that came out saying that his Parkinson's drugs led to his suicide. I couldn't find a specific fact of which drug he was taking, but I did research Parkinson's drugs. None of them had fluoride. That surprised me. But they were all fantastically unnatural and interesting compounds. I'll say that from a chemistry point of view. You know, some things are more natural than others. Like a good example, caffeine is, you know, a very natural alkaloid. Ethanol, alcohol, is a very natural drug. Someone, I was at someone's place, I forget which place it was for a second, but they had apples on the ground, and boy, could you smell the fermentation. Well, those apples had alcohol in them. You know, they were naturally creating it. And when you consume alcohol, you know, you break it down and you process it, and it's all very natural and fine. As long as it's only the quantity in an apple and not in a quart of apple cider. So poor Robin Williams. Supposedly he was depressed, and, you know, it certainly seems like that's feasible given that he hung himself. That was shocking to me. I really didn't expect that Robin Williams would take his own life. And I would say most people did not expect that. And that's one that collectively, societally, we have to come to terms with that. It's interesting, you know, the global cycle is the world is in an 8 year, and the world is in a 9-8 month. The 9 is the number of losses, and the 8, well, Robin Williams was 8-ish, Williams 178, you know. The 9 lost the 8, the world lost this 8-ish person, this wonderful, special person. I think we're all just sort of, we all have to grieve to one extent or another. I mean, I loved the guy and respected him, and he was so important to life, such a unique contribution to life. Hang on, get some pizza. Fantastic pizza. Pizza's good cold. You know, sometimes I don't drink it all, throw it in the fridge. Take it out ice cold, great. Oh, just you name it, it's amazing. I like to make it strong. After I make it, I'll pour extra water in the French press and rinse that out, and I'll put that in a separate cup because it's really dilute. But it's sort of like to not waste the coffee, but it's also, you know, once you finish the main batch, then you drink that sort of lesser batch. You get the full measure of your coffee, but it's pizza's good even diluted. It's not as good, but it's better than many coffees, even in diluted form. Then it becomes like fluid, right? It turns out that, you know, for a while that they thought coffee was not good for you. It dried you out. Diuretic, they call it. But now they've realized, hey, fluid is fluid. And when you drink a cup of coffee, you're drinking a cup of fluid. Yeah, there's a bit of stuff in there that you have to pee out. So you have to dedicate some water to getting rid of some stuff that goes out in your urine, right? Okay. Well, so if you drink, you know, 8 ounces of coffee, then let's say 2 ounces of that has to be dedicated to passing some of the stuff that's in the coffee. Okay, well, you still drank 6 ounces. Robin Williams, I don't really know what to say. Normally, in my quotes, when someone passes away that I think had a contribution to life, I'll go and I'll look for their quotes and I'll sort of feature them. Either sometimes I'll feature if they're really profound or really had a hefty impact. I'll have nothing but quotes from them for my 9 quotes for that day. In other cases, I'll sort of distribute those quotes into my files, my made-up files, my files that are already prepared, so that gradually I'll send out quotes in the future from that person. I just didn't have the heart to do either with Robin Williams. I finally just sent out 1 quote from him and a little bit of my own thought about the subject. I've got his quotes in a file somewhere, and I'll go through them maybe sometime and send them out, but it's like that song, American Pie, The Day the Music Died. There's a bit of that. It says something about this world, that a person as important and as constructive and as original and creative and as well-liked as Robin Williams doesn't want to be here. It says something. This world increasingly takes more and more energy to be constructive. I heartily encourage you to be constructive. It's worth it. As things get darker, our own individual light will shine brighter. Not from us doing more, but from the darkness increasing. So don't be discouraged. Use Robin Williams as an example of the need to be a good person, the effect of being a good person, and that life is short, and appreciate the geese flying overhead. They fly right over this house. I was saying to the homeless guy yesterday, he was talking about feathers. I seem to have lost the feathers on my bike. Did you bite? I was like, no, I didn't see them. And he's like, did your cat? My cat had come out to say hello to him. And I said, no, the cat's not injured. Did your dog? No. You lost those feathers, buddy. But I was saying to him that sometimes when these geese fly right overhead, they will drop a feather. And you go in the backyard and there's a feather from a goose that flew right overhead. That's kind of lifelike. That's a lot like life. Well, a feather dropped this last week. But it's up to us to have a good life, to make the most of a life, and to not be discouraged. Feathers will drop. Feathers are being born right now. Robin Williams was just born right now somewhere. The next one. Speaking of Bill Hicks, yesterday I got onto YouTube. I tell you, this YouTube is addictive. I'm just warning you. This is a newsflash warning. YouTube can be addictive. Yesterday, I forget why I even got on there. And I was watching Rock Climbers. And then I ended up at Bill Hicks, which is sort of an interesting progression. I think it was started by someone sending a link to a /.story to a YouTube. I know there's one on computer chip manufacturer, and then there was some other link, and the next thing you know, I'm lost in YouTube land. Let me just see what my links are there. Oh, I've closed my browser. Memory management. Anyway, let's do the rock climbing first. I watch these great, let's call that my rewatch of the week. Things are a little bit impromptu this time around. Choose your reason, but let's say, given that this is the humanity cast, it's a little bit less structured than my usual. I was watching these rock climbing videos yesterday, and I started with arguably the best. The story is, these two guys have now climbed the toughest rock climbing route in the world. Now, this is a moving target. Rock climbing has ratings. I think it started out, the system went up to 510, was the highest. And then they realized, hey, wait a minute, we found one, someone just climbed something harder. And so then it went to the 511s, and then they sort of had to, you know, come up with a way to differentiate the 10s from the 11s, and then, of course, someone climbed a 12. Well, it turned out they started coming up with things like how tiring is a route. And then for the 513s, it was like you had to leave the rock. You had to jump to make the route a 513. I think that it's either for the 512 or the 513, one of the sort of the measuring sticks is, do you leave the rock? Oh, man. So anyway, I ended up watching some great rock climbing, these truly great rock climbers. These two guys conquering this one face. La Dura Dura, dubbed the hardest rock climb in the world. A 515C. Even the C means something, like A being easier than B being easier than C. To give you an idea, afterwards I was watching stuff like a 512B, and that was amazing. And this is a 515. I don't even know if I've ever seen someone do a 514. And these guys were doing a 515. These guys worked at it for not just months, but I think they had to come back the next year. What they do with the modern challenging rock faces, they have to survey and choose and find one that's going to be super tough but maybe doable. And then they rock anchor it. They have a top rope, so they're suspended from a rope. They go over the face, they choose where they think the route is going to be, and then they put in rock anchors so that they can use that rock anchor protection. They don't use it to assist their climbing, but they can use it for safety. There's sort of different levels of it. Top roping, you can climb a route and have a rope coming from above. And that rope is only in case you fall. In other words, it's not helping you. But that's considered much less of an impact or much less impressive than if you climb it from below and have to provide your own protection. That's the hardest. Climbing from below, providing your own protection, and the very hardest is you're the lead climber and you haven't seen the route before and you climb it the first time. Now that's like off the charts impressive. And then maybe the next is you get a chance to strategize a bit, but you're still the first, and you're doing it as a lead climber. And maybe the next is I think they call it red pointing. Red pointing is you sort of work the route out in pieces. You get many cracks at it. It might be that you've only accomplished it in pieces. You've never actually done this whole thing from bottom to top. There's all these different sort of standards of rock climbing. Well, these guys, it was a bottom to top, first ascent of a 515C. These guys were truly amazing. Two of the best in the world. They sort of met. They, you know, one guy came from a different country to meet the other guy and to climb this route. Just sort of so impressive, so breathtaking, and so amazing. And of course, you know, it doesn't help you get to work faster, or doesn't put more food on the table necessarily. But it shows you what's possible, and you get interesting thoughts from these guys. You get interesting perspectives, because when you and I are trying to do something, we have our challenges, we have our moments, and we need to have interesting thoughts and realizations. We need to realize that we can get interesting thoughts and interesting realizations at the moment where we are working the hardest. At that very moment, you can realize the most and greatest things. When I came up with spring and loop theory, I was working my hardest. 1 week in that period of time, I worked 123 hours. Paid work, 123 hours, plus did all my other chores, shopping and laundry and all the other chores in my life. Yeah, it starts to impact sleep, right? But if you are focusing your mind, and I was listening to this Brian Greene's The Elegant Universe, it's string theory. I was listening to his book on CD, on audio disc, over and over again for about a year and a half before I came up with my theory. I then went from that 123 hour a week maximum job, I went to an even tougher job. Mission Impossible, everyone's against you kind of job. I had to be the guy who literally goes in at nighttime. You're legally allowed to be there, but not a single person that you're working with wants you to be there. The existing staff don't want you to be there. The client doesn't want you to be there. The doctors don't want you to be there. The lawyers don't want you to be there. Well, what did I have? I couldn't eat. I couldn't even have the lights on. What did I have? I had an audiobook on an MP3 player. The Elegant Universe. What was I thinking about? I had only one thing to think about. It wasn't by accident that I came up with that theory. I wanted to find it. I wasn't going to accept second best. I wasn't going to accept theories that broke. I wasn't going to accept any theory that didn't explain gravity. And isn't it interesting, my latest, I published now, The Atom. I think I might have mentioned it last week. It's now on YouTube. Got that one in the can. And isn't it interesting that in that I say that a gravitational effect is responsible for the proton, neutron, electron interaction of an atom. It's a gravity phenomenon. It's not a weak force or electromagnetic phenomenon. Yeah, those forces are there. Electromagnetic is always there. It's like saying there's always air or there's always sunshine. Like I say, it's the bloodstream of life. It's always there. But it's gravity. That electron orbits that nucleus just like the planets orbit the sun, in exactly the same way. The same forces, simple forces, are at work. It's not something else. It's not plus attracts minus. That just drives me nuts. You know, they say, well, positive attracts negative, right? Well, why doesn't the electron crash into the nucleus? Oh, well, there's a strong repulsion. Well, wait a minute. You're attracting something and then you're strongly repelling it? What's going on there? Well, something different. All right. Pretty good ramble this week. So I did listen to some Bill Hicks's yesterday. Re-listened to some, but some were new. I enjoyed one yesterday. Bill Hicks ripping on Jay Leno. Now, in fairness, what bothered him about Jay Leno was Jay Leno, to him, sold out. He did a series of Doritos commercials. This bothered Bill Hicks a lot. Well, I have other issues with Jay Leno. I think Jay Leno is a poor comedian. He's a terrible host because he lacks confidence. I've talked about this before. Anyway, it's fun to hear Bill Hicks rip this guy. Bill Hicks could rip anybody in a pretty humorous way. I qualify that as my re-listen of the week with Bill Hicks. As I say, this is one of the sloppiest casts. So my rewatch was the rock climbing, and let's see, cool and uncool. I was looking at shoes yesterday. I go to a dealnews.com, a deal site, and they happen to be featuring, among their editor's choices, the best deals. They were featuring an Adidas shoe and a Nike shoe. The Adidas one is the Spring Blade, and I, in my notes I say, the look of it 10 out of 10. You're literally walking on spring blades. The durability, not so much. People, after a few weeks or a few months, this thing just basically falls apart. And then the Nike Men's Air Max, the very latest, 2014. Very expensive shoe, the value is not there. But the color style choices, this thing is available in about 50 colors, color combinations. And the colors are fantastic. I mean, fantastic. It's one of those things that, if I could, if someone just like, hey, Floyd, just for fun, why don't you wear a different pair of shoes for the next 50 days? I'd be happy to do it. These shoes are just such so eye-popping and so funny. So those are both the cool and uncool things of the week. Because, of course, they hook you on the look, right? They hook you on the colors. They hook you on these. You're walking on springs. And not springs like the Shox SHOX one, the Nike one. It's closer to the blades of a razor. You know, those blades, they're short and they're curved. It's really more like that. It's like stacked razor blades, but they're springs. They're like that guy, Petronas, the South American who was allowed to run in the Olympics, who had the artificial legs. They're like that, scaled down, like six or eight of them on the sole of your foot. Really kind of an amazing shoe, but unfortunately not practical. All right, let's scroll down here in this random cast. Humanicast. Let's try and come up with a quote. This might be a good one. This is from Randy Masters. Randy Masters, I encourage you to look into this guy. He's a guy that, very interesting musician, very philosophical guy, no doubt about it. The quote is, humility, allowing others to be new every day. It's one of those quotes that I don't fully get the first time I read it. Allowing others to be new every day. I like the second half of it, allowing others to be new every day. I just don't see that as humility. I see that as being open. It's like the Zen approach, Zen mind, beginner's mind. If you can approach the world like a newborn baby, like a five-year-old kid who's so curious about everything, that's a good way to approach life. That's the Zen way. Anyway, humility is certainly good. I just don't fully see the connection in that quote, but I respect the guy, and I thought it was a very original quote, that's for sure. And then just in the same excerpt from one of his YouTubes, I wrote down, and encouraging us to follow your bliss. Now, of course, Follow Your Bliss is Joseph Campbell, the Power of Myth series of interviews that he did for public television. It's just so true to follow your bliss, right? And true bliss, not drug-addled addiction, but truly your bliss. Follow your bliss. You know, when you work a 9-to-5 job, I'll include this story. A couple of days ago, I was riding up to the library on my bike, and I saw out of the corner of my eye, sort of one block away from where I normally ride, down the street, kind of so to speak, I saw this garage sale, and I was like, well, let's check it out. And it's on the front lawn, it's not really a garage sale, and it was on off a very busy street, and I get there, three people, nice people, young people, and I'm looking around, and for some reason, I can just tell, I could have just said, predicted right off the top. If I had a microphone to record it, I could have just said that this looks like an interesting garage sale. So I'm looking around, and I don't know where to stop, because I'm riding my bike, I can't carry a lot. I'm heading to the library to do something. This guy's got power tools, and he has an entire bookshelf full of books. This is a guy who's not just putting out six books he's done with. This is a guy who's putting out all his books, and sure enough, the guy's moving. He's moving to Texas. And they were like, hey, nice shirt. And I have this shirt my wife got me. It's got, it's really kind of awesome shirt. That's like the universe, like one of those space pictures, only it's designed for a t-shirt. And it's got, just sort of all the stuff you think of in a space-themed shirt. Without it being tacky or too much fantasy. Anyway, he was like, hey, nice shirt. And I said, I invented a new theory of physics, so my wife thought I should get a t-shirt, a physics t-shirt. And I'm like, oh, cool. And anyway, we just sort of talked sort of in passing. And I just said, hey, you got some great stuff here. And the way he had priced stuff was just amazing. And the first thing I asked him to tell me what it was if I can remember them, slam buttons or something. Oh, this was like a collectible from 30 years ago. Just sort of it looked a bit like a checker. The old-fashioned checkers used to be sort of thick. And like bigger than a quarter, almost like a silver dollar in size, kind of thick. that's what these look like. And I guess they were like these collectible things for kids. He had a whole box of them, all these different designs. And he said, I said, these are cool. This is the kind of thing that kids love, you know? And he said, yeah. He said, when kids come by today, he says, I've been telling them, take 10 of them. He's not even selling them. He's just like, take 10 of them. And I was telling him, hey, you got some really great stuff here. It was like Friday. And I was saying, hey, you got some really great stuff here. You know, you over the weekend, you're going to do well. You're going to sell quite a bit of stuff. And he was like, I've already sold 1/3 of my stuff. You know, this was a guy who was getting rid of stuff and pricing it to sell and very therapeutic and healthy and positive. So I walked some more and they're like, yeah, we got stuff over here too. And finally I settled on this. He had a table where there's sort of, you know, there's usually the electronic gadgets, you know, adapters and various things. But he had something that looked like an old-fashioned Walkman, plus with wire sticking out of it. And then it had like the three prongs of an AC plug, two of those. Yeah. Why, did you hear the geese that time? Wow, right over the house, really loud. Different flock. It was an adapter that goes in your vehicle. You plug it into the cigarette lighter, and now you've got AC coming out. And this was like an old-school adapter, super heavy-duty, so it's not like some sort of flaky modern version. And even had a little plug for your cell phone. I happen to know that'll work with some of our cell phones. And it was like, I just got to get this. This is just so cool. It was like $2, you know. And then I realized I didn't have my money. And I was like, okay, well, someone will take it, and have a good day. I really enjoyed it. See you later. And he's like, why don't you take it? So he gave me this thing for free. I was like, oh, okay, wow. So I went and did my library thing, came home, and I thought, I'm going to go back. At a minimum, I'm going to give this guy $2 for that thing. And I hadn't had a chance to talk about my theory too much. And I thought, I'm just going to give him, I have a business card that can, you know, if you type in the URL, you can get to my YouTubes. And I thought, I'm just going to give him my business card. And maybe, who knows, maybe he'll check out the theory. Because he seemed genuinely interested. So I go back. He's getting busier and he's, you know, getting phone calls and he's getting people coming in. So during the breaks, I pick up some stuff, some real deals, you know, type stuff. And then I'm just about done. I've talked to, you know, my physics. He was one of the first people I've actually talked about my theory with. And, you know, the person asks questions and you answer and you explain where you're coming from and how you came about your theory and the pros and cons of the other theories, yada, yada. And I'm just about to leave and I want to go over to his bookshelf. And I had already sized up his bookshelf, and here is what it was. It was all of this guy's books. I probably wouldn't be interested in any of them, but I might find one or two. And admittedly, that's sort of typical for me in books, because I don't read fiction. I don't have time for that. I'm not interested. I cut that out of my life decades ago. No regrets. And this guy, a liberal arts major type guy, you know, arts, something in the arts. But this guy's a thinker, and he is interested in the universe and physics and that. And that's the thing. You don't have to just be one thing. You don't have to be just scientific. You don't have to be just arts. And this guy was much more open than most physicists. Much more. Much more analytical. He even used a phrase that I use, very specific phrase that I use to describe my theory. Spring and loop theory is a lens. A filtering, clarifying lens. When I read physics books now, that spring and loop theory lens allows me to go, this guy is full of caca, and this guy has something to offer. And it's fantastic for that. That's what happens when you have a simpler, better model. That's what happens. Anyway, this guy, he came up with the phrase, he said, it's like a lens. It's like a lens to view the world or something like that. Well, that's exactly what it's like. So imagine this guy, this arts guy, totally getting my theory. And all these physicists, of course, you know, they don't get it. I remember having a long talk with that guy, David, on Slashdot. And the funny thing was, I ran into this David guy. He commented on one of my comments a couple weeks back. And I just, you know, gave him a brief answer. And then I said, sort of to the world at large, I said, you know, David and I, we have a history. And I just linked to our history, where this guy was just so close-minded. And this was a guy that called me a crackpot. And, you know, really the interesting thing, this guy never apologized, never admitted, never gave me any credit for anything. When I mentioned we had a history, he didn't come back and go, oh, yeah, good point, bad point, whatever. He didn't say anything. Anything. And that's the David. They are so stuck in the mud. You can lead that horse to water. You can dunk their head in the water. You can pour water over their head. You could inject it into them, and somehow they would not absorb that water. That's a David. You cannot give them what they need. You cannot do it. It's truly a ruined, it's a life-ruining name, truly. You have created the most closed-minded name you can create. Now, they have potential. Everyone has potential. But you have branded that person so very effectively. It's like tattoos, right? You know, in theory, you can get tattoos removed, but realistically, they are brands, and they have a lingering after effect that's usually negative. This homeless guy yesterday had an interesting kind of a tattoo of like a... To me, I didn't ask him, but it looked like... Is it Neptune, the god of the ocean or whatever? And how the hair sort of flowed, and it was all like sort of the hair around... It was mostly just the face of this guy and then the hair flowing around. It was pretty good. It was on his left forearm. You know, even in tattoos, this guy was more conservative than average, healthier than average. So, I get to the guy's bookshelf. I'm just starting to look at it. As I say, he's getting busy. He's going to have to go and do something. We're on our last moments together. And he goes, yeah. Like I had said something, but I hadn't. He said, yeah. He says, I've got, I think, one physics book left, he said. Like he's totally reading my mind. And he said, I sold one, but I got one left. Guess which book he had left? Brian Greene, The Elegant Universe. The book that I listened to on audio for a year and a half before coming up with my theory. The book that I, as I told him, I listened to it over and over and over and over and over again in my truck. And when I was on the job on my MP3 player. And then I even edited it down so that I got rid of the trivial examples, the non-interesting parts of it, condensed it even further, basically by about a factor of two, so that it was more concentrated, you know, lent itself more to thinking, and I could go through the whole thing faster and start over again. And there was the book. $2, hardcover. No question, I buy it. Because that book has sentimental value now. That's what led to my theory. And so this artsman... You know, this non-scientific person was one of the most scientific people that I've met, ever. And he's, anyway, what started me on my memory of this guy was, we're talking about following your bliss. Allowing others to be new every day was the last quote. He's going to Texas. He says, yeah, he says, I'm going to do woodwork in Texas. A friend of mine's got a wood shop, and I'm just going to be creative with wood. Because he said his job is killing him. He said, I just hate it. And it was basically just a 9-to-5 job. But 9-to-5 jobs are killers. They are, because they are so routine. You wake up at the same time. You and your neighbors start your cars at the same time. You see your neighbors at the traffic lights. You hit the exact same light going to work. Like, you know, 7:02, you hit this traffic light at this intersection. You park in the same spot at the same area. You meet the same people at the coffee machine. You get the same type of calls for whatever reason, whatever your business is. And then you go home in the rush hour, you're exhausted by all the boredom. And you're in this mindless rush hour where everyone's on their cell phones and they're half asleep and the light turns green and each car takes like 2 seconds to get moving. And you're just like sheep going home, right? You've been milked and you've given up your wool and you're just going back to the barn. It's killer, man. Try and avoid it. I told this guy, I go out of my way to avoid 9-to-5. I said, I will work killer hours. I will work bizarre killer hours just to avoid 9-to-5. And that's what I do, and I love doing it. I love working everything but 9-to-5. One of my first care jobs was 6 years ago, and when I started that job, they had a problem with staff. They had a problem where staff would not be available, and then they would try and phone other staff to say, can you cover a shift? And they'd have to phone everybody, and even then they'd have trouble, and sometimes the managers would have to work that shift until I started working there. And then they realized, hey, just call Floyd, and he'll work. I worked 2,000 hours of additional shifts in 2 years. That's a lot of overtime. But it's just attitude, right? And it's also, it's mission impossible versus 9-to-5. I love working the job where suddenly I get called. It's going to be overtime, so it's time and a half. They need somebody, and it's a new shift, it's a new time, it's a new this, it's a new that. I love that, unscripted. It's just more real. It's like that guy yesterday going, hey, if you need someone to help you do some work around the place, I'm available. You know, that was unscripted. And it's good on a one-time deal, but I don't want that to be a regular part of my life. That overtime is good when it comes, and then it goes. 9-to-5 doesn't go. You do it over and over and over. It's like those pile drivers. you know, you got this pile, and they just start piling it, piling. I was reading about the Space Needle, and they said that the piles for that go down like 150 feet, or some truly ludicrous figure. That's a half a football field. Those piles are actually the steel portions of the supports of the Space Needle, Seattle Space Needle, are like 150 feet into the ground. And then the amount of concrete they put into the pedestal, the center of gravity of the Space Needle is basically right at ground level. Half of the mass of the Space Needle is underground, and half is above ground. That doesn't happen. That does not happen. It's truly a well-engineered structure. But getting back to those pile drivers driving those Seattle Space Needle beams into the ground, that pounding of the pile driver, right? You know, you're building a pier, right? So you want to sink those pylons into the mud of the riverbank, and you just keep pounding and pounding and pounding, and it advances a half an inch at a time, and you pound it 1,000 times, and now you've embedded that piling, that post, into the ground. That's what your 9-to-5 does to you. That's brutal. So, this guy was going to Texas, going to work with wood, and he said, yeah, he said, I even did some blacksmithing. I said, you're kidding, because our kids did it last summer. And he said, yeah, right over here. And I said, you're kidding. They went to the same one. This isn't a big blacksmithing shop. He and our kids did the same thing. Talk about being in sync. And then he said, I even built a blacksmithing forge in my basement. I said, you're kidding. He said, not a big one. As if I didn't have to get excited because it wasn't a big one. How can you build a small one? It's micro-sized. It's the size of a matchbox. You know, it has to be a certain size, right? He was just humble, right? He was being creative and he was humble. So when we signed off with each other, I said, good luck with your creativity. So, this has been Floyd Maxwell, justthinkit.com, doing a Floydcast, number 27, the Humanity Edition, for August 18, 2014. Good luck with your creativity. Take care.